You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 225. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. Welcome on the show. For those listening on the podcast, August 20th, we're recording Wednesday night, and tonight got a fun show lined up talking about guys we haven't talked about. It is kind of a funny topic, Steve, because it's like ironic in a way, because now we are talking about him. But really, the fun of this topic is looking at players that have had really productive seasons and deserve the airtime and deserve us to kind of break down what's going on behind the scenes, what the actual stats have been. But maybe the industry is similar to us in that they haven't talked about some of these guys, or it might just be happenstance. But I feel like there's a handful of names on here that, as I was going through the rundown, there were some eye-opening things where I was like, okay, maybe we weren't in on these guys that much coming into the year, or we just didn't end up with a lot of shares on our roster. But for one reason or another, they have just been off the radar in terms of WAF coverage. And it's time to give dues there. So we've got half a dozen hitters, half a dozen pitchers. Going to be a fun show. Might run long. Fine if it does. These are guys that if we don't talk about them now, how can we go into the off season with a full picture of some of the changes and impressive things that they're doing? So excited to get into it, man. I know we were talking off the air. Sounds like you're making a little playoff push. I am in the playoffs, so I've got the live stats rolling as we record tonight. I've got a lead against my brother. It's a heated rivalry in the 25-year history of our league, but hoping to have good news for both of us at the end of this week. Steve, how's it going?
Good. Yeah, even the fact that I'm with how my draft has gone and how I've complained about this on that show, won't get into it. Just the fact that I'm even fighting for my playoff live, let alone as we speak in a playoff spot, knock on wood, is pretty incredible. I have Fernando Tatis to thank for that, who's just, you know, learned how to be an elite player over the last 30 games or whatever. So yes. That's been fun. But to pivot back to the show topic, and not to undermine your performance and wishing you luck there, but I am very conscious of this in like a paranoid way.
Sure.
Like, I feel like I am bitter towards breakouts that I don't roster, like specifically in my home league. I am paranoid that like I'm only talking about players that are on my team that I focus about, even though I'm not talking about my team. It's guys that directly impact me. I mean, and that's how we build the show. Like, right. Like we follow certain guys and talk about guys we're looking to pick up that are available in our league. So,
or it's guys we were, or it's guys we were talking about a ton in the off season.
Yeah,
you know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
Like they're
yeah.
just, it's not like to say these guys are boring either.
No. I don't know. I don't have any like CJ Abrams this year. I know we talked about him a bunch this year, but for me, it's like, I don't want to talk about him because I didn't predict him doing this. Not that many people did. And I just didn't luck into any shares or anything like that. So I'm glad we're doing this to sort of cover up any unconscious biases that I may have and talk about guys that deserve it. And there are a few guys here that I do like and am interested in and have shares, you know, not in like my home league and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it's hard to cover everyone, especially when we're like a weekly show. Right. So, glad we're focusing on some guys that definitely should have gotten some more love from us throughout the year.
Yeah, and as we go through, we'll talk about maybe why it is that we haven't talked about him as much. But yeah, we got a ton to get into, and I feel like the topic is pretty self-explanatory. So let's jump in, and maybe as we go, we can assess, do we think this is more of an industry-wide not fading, but it kind of sleeping. Overlooking, or is it just us? I'm gonna go out on a limb and say the first one is no in Hunter Goodman, because I feel like you can't ignore how productive he's been at catcher. That said, I think when you look at the body of work, combined with last year. And we briefly mentioned it, Steve, when we were projecting out the first round with Dan on the show a couple weeks back, that like Hunter Goodman has quietly delivered almost first round value when you consider the catcher eligibility. 251 batting average, 34 homers, 69 runs, and 69 RBIs, and 861 OPS. Now, we got to mention that Goodman is out with a shoulder strain, that for how much the Rockies value him at just 26 years old, he is probably not going to add much to that stat line before the end of the season, which is a bummer for him, just because it looked like it could have been some eye-popping stats, where now it just looks like, you know, an excellent catcher year. But on the Fangraphs player rater, which we'll cite throughout the show, which is 5x5 categories and 15 team, Goodman is the number 8 hitter on the player rater. And that will only go down, right, because everybody's getting more stats. But what a season. And I know, Steve, it's rare for us, you especially, to invest early on in catcher, but I know you also love Coors situation, and Hunter Goodman is a pretty good Coors situation carrying the C. Talk to me about Goodman. Do you feel like there's any industry like overlooking here, or is everybody back in because this is Coors and Rockies and a slugger who could hit 40 bombs?
I mean, there definitely was, in hindsight, considering where he was drafted, right? I mean, 67, that's still relatively early, right? I mean, it's the top, you know, 5 round and 15 teams, you know, 6-7 rounds in 12 teams. And he was the 5th catcher off the board. But I still think that maybe because of the elevated K rate, the fact that, you know, Coors does prop up players from time to time, and they have career years that you may not be fully bought into. You know, the whiff rates and chase rates all backed up that elevated strikeout rate, right? So I could see some hesitation there, but that clearly wasn't warranted. That being said, I'm probably going to be cautious next year, just given the volatility of, one, catchers, two, catchers with high strikeout rates, three, the fact that he doesn't have, you know, any plate discipline whatsoever, right? He chases a ton too.
Yeah.
So he's going to go as catcher number one. I don't know how many shares I will have of that. That being said, like, it's deserved to be talked about, like, how amazing this season has been. He would have been a lock for 40 homers if not for the shoulder injury. So that's a clear bummer. And he also started off like really slow this year, right? Like,
there was,
he was probably a drop April. In shallower leagues, in April, right?
No, he was mashing in April in terms of power. It was with 8
okay.
homers. He did May. He came back quite a bit with like a 647 OPS, but
it wasn't that bad.
Down production. What I will say in defense, for Hunter Goodman is when you think Coors, you think home road splits. He's actually done a good amount of damage, more damage on the road, within a 566 slug compared to the 513 at Coors, which is wild. That's 19 homers on the road versus 15 at Coors. And he's also got great splits on lefty righty in terms of power. So, you know, I think that some of the things we usually point to, it would appear he's covered there, but we also said the same about Cal Raleigh last year.
Yeah.
So I think,
To your point on the home road splits, he's hitting 236 at home, 265 on the road. Coors has, you know, more than homers even. The reason why it's so hitter friendly is because it's such a big outfield and elevates hits and, you know, has your high BABIPs at home. So, you would think that maybe that could potentially cover up some of the flaws in the strikeout rate. And, you know, he did strike out less last year, so maybe there will be a bit of regression in a good way in that sense. So, you know, there's still a lot to like here.
Yeah.
Steve,
over under
his BABIP at home is 284. His BABIP on the road is 320. Like, he's probably not going to run a 284 BABIP
at Coors. Yeah, the way he hits the ball.
Yeah.
Over under pick 33 off the board next year, because he's not going to play much from here. People have the Cal Raleigh burn fatigue, but also this feels a little bit different in terms of the age and the Coors factor and the splits and everything. You think he goes like around the 2-3 turn, or do you think he slips a little bit more?
I mean, Cal Raleigh's ADP was 18.7 last year. Mm-hmm. And that was off a historic 60 homer season, right? So there was still a bit of hesitation. Like, he was a, you know, early second rounder. So I guess, you know, if I'm looking back, kind of cheating here a little bit.
Yeah, who the next
catcher
was. The first
catcher off the board in 2025 as it loads here. The ADP data stays the same. Sorry. So, yeah, who that was probably like William Contreras or something.
Ben Rice and Langoliers both went at like 52 in this draft.
Yeah. I'm going to say over then. I think the injury, the strikeout rate factor, the Cal Raleigh, you know, scare factor may scare people off a little bit or gives people some hesitation to jump early in on a catcher. Had he finished the season and had 40 homers, I think just because of the position and just how valuable catchers can be, especially in two catcher leagues and how NFBC sort of sets the market on that, I would have said over, but I'll say under, but I'm going to predict around like 40 to 45 for ADP.
Yeah.
We'll settle on.
I mean, honestly, if it goes, I'll say for me personally, 45 and beyond, I think he moves from, you know, maybe we'll see to like, I would target him.
You want him. Yeah, that's fair.
He's a non-zero in steals. I think last year he hit 278. This year was 251. And Langoliers felt fine at that ADP for what he did last year.
Yeah.
And that was with pretty much 10, 12 homers less than what I think Goodman could do. So, yeah, I mean, I know I was the one in on Cal Raleigh coming in this year, so I could get burned.
We've talked about how, you know, don't be scared off by guys with high strikeouts rates and low plate discipline. Like, you know, I know Wood is an example because he doesn't chase, but, you know, same with Nick Kurtz. But there's you shouldn't shut yourself off because of those factors, right? You miss out on some goodness, no pun intended, from Goodman. His BABIP at home 2 years ago was 366. So you could expect some regression in a good way on that side.
Yeah, kind of split the difference between this year and last year. But I mean, Eno Sayers talked about it before that, like, some of these high strikeout power hitting guys, it's not that it isn't a skill. It's that it's a skill that can fall off a cliff quickly as they get to like age 30. And, you know, that's a tease for a guy we'll talk about later that's starting to reinvent himself a little bit. But for Goodman, I think now it's still like ripe for the picking that it's not a fluke. He's had back to back years, right, with a 30 homer output. So, Goodman.
Yeah. What do you what's your projection for him next year? Like, I would say
262, you know, 37 homers.
I mean, if that's the case, then you're taking him in early second round, you know?
Yeah. I mean, because basically, so last year was 144, because the other thing was, didn't he DH a lot more this year? Let me double check that. So this year he DH 33
games. Yeah, they essentially played him pretty much every day, right? I mean,
good radio in 2025. Goodman DH'd. Okay, so it was up to 39 times. So maybe there's a little bit of a playing time ceiling, but I think
he's their best hitter, right? They're going to want him in the lineup pretty much every day, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think 35 homers, health pending, is true talent, and it could be more on top of that if Coors shakes out. But we'll keep rolling because we could talk about Goodman all night. Apparently, it's an interesting one. Another one that we talked about him a time or two before the season. He was not a name that people overlooked. A lot of talk was made about Sal Stewart. He was a very popular sleeper at the time, and there was quite a discount at pick 160. that just seemed to be where a lot of times we're starting to reach and shop for pitchers. So I didn't personally end up with a lot of shares, Steve, but Sal Stewart with a 3-run homer against the Cards tonight is now the MLB league leader in RBIs with 94. That was his 27th homer. He was hitting .258 with an .802 OPS coming into tonight. So you look at the body of work now, and for a 22-year-old Sal Stewart, first and third base eligibility, he's got 27 bombs, 12 steals, going to be over .260 average, league leader in RBIs, like quite a coming out party for Sal Stewart. What do we make of this? And did you miss out, Steve, or do you think the industry is overlooking this at all for how impressive it is and how young he is?
No, I didn't. I basically targeted Sal Stewart in most drafts that I was in. It was just the fact that he was such a wide awake sleeper that most people either knew that I wanted him in leagues where I, you know, with close friends, or he just went, you know, before I was able to grab him. I do have a few shares of him, and I'm doing well in leagues where I did target them. And I'm surprised that we haven't talked about him because of that, right? We definitely did hype him up, in at least two or three shows in the offseason.
Oh yeah, because I remember shouting Frank Stanfill. That was like his. If CBS had a chalkboard, Sal Stewart was on Frank. So shout out to Frank on that one.
Yeah. I mean, going to keep three positions next year in most leagues, right? He has.
I know first and third. Does he have?
He has seven games at second. So we're in leagues where it's five. He'll have second. So at least in the big boy leagues, you'll have first and third. It is a game changer when you have, you know, a corner and a middle, right? That gives it you so many options where you have a CI and MI, but you know, we're picking at nits here. I mean, what's there not to like? Basically everything that we hoped for and saw, in as far as like the quality of contact metrics from the short sample in 2025 have ported over. Sure, not to the extent that was in that, you know, small 58 plate appearance sample from 2025, but it's obviously done enough. The barrel rate is good. The plate discipline is good enough, and you know, basically average. You know, there's enough bat speed. He pulls the ball in the air. Not at the rate that that happened the year before, but you know, does have basically, you know, all fields power in a sense. Like that kind of is counterintuitive, but everything that we were hoping for with Stewart has sort of come true. So just a great all-around season. I know there was a decent slump in there too, after that red-hot April and May. And I'm kind of glad that happened because he's can't come out of it and picked up again, right? We always talk anecdotally about how, you know, the league adjusts. You got to see how the player adjusts back. And it's always nice when you see someone at his age, just 22 years old, make those adjustments and come back and be productive, right? Because how many times do you see it, like, you know, someone starts off hot, the league adjusts, you know, and then they're never heard from again. You know, Aristides Aquino comes to mind on his own on the Reds in that recent history, right?
So yeah, for sure.
You know, it's not like absolutely elite underlying metrics, but
yeah, that's the
they're
I
still
think
really
that's
good.
The interesting part, really, yeah, is yeah. I'm trying to think of a comparison, really, because even in modern, like the past 2-3 years, when you see somebody that's not like lighting up on the Savant stuff, you usually go down and their pull air rate is really high if they've got 28, 30 plus homers, and Stewart's isn't. So still, like, he's a pretty, you know, he strikes me as such a gamer. Like, I feel like he is just going to be a headlines type of player for one reason or another, like throughout his career. And I wonder what the industry will do with Stewart, because some of the traditional stuff that we point to under the hood doesn't look that incredible, but also he's just 22 years old. Like, you love that home ballpark.
The fact that he has a 13% barrel rate and just strikes out 22% of the time. Like,
yeah, that's good.
That's a great pairing, right?
The position eligibility is definitely going to buoy up the value. So, yeah, I guess I'm just saying it's tough to peg like where he'll go, because if everything looked bright red, I feel like people would maybe be having him in like the third round. And absolutely. I don't know if he will be. Yeah. I think he might be more in that like 50 to 75 range. Is that fair? Or do you think he's going to go sooner than that?
I think that's probably where he'll go. And I think it may be an opportunity, right? Like, if this was his stat line before we had StatCast sliders.
Oh yeah. With all the hype he had coming into the year.
Wouldn't he? I mean, but it's funny. He had hype because of the StatCast sliders.
Right. It's just like, it's the backwards nature of what we do.
So,
So that's Sal Stewart. I think, first and foremost, give him his flowers for a heck of a year and a bright career ahead. And beyond that, we're going to grab the popcorn to see where, like, he's going to be a really interesting name in the pitcher list, too early mock to see where he goes. Next up, we've got Jake McCarthy, who, going right back to Coors, a guy that I think, Steve, might have been a fade in years past for you when he was on the D-backs, but obviously a much different picture here. With the Rockies, we knew the speed was there, but what's been impressive about McCarthy is how he's met Coors in the perfect way by adding bat speed and adding pull air. And all of a sudden, a guy who felt like just kind of a rabbit mold with like contact and 25 plus steals is sitting at 13 homers mid-August to where he's a non-zero there. And there's some data to kind of back it up a little bit. So McCarthy still kept the hit tool, a 294 average, but an 824 OPS to go with it. And, you know, I think there's the room for growth here, even though he's 29 years old, is like, I feel like if he continues to blossom, I know he's been on a heater, right? There was it like the month of July? Yeah, he had 22 RBIs in the month of July. August has still been really good. Even a better slash line, honestly, 324 and an 876 OPS. So he's on fire since the All-Star break. But will the Rockies play him every day? Because he sat like 20 games this season, which is kind of annoying, or at least come off the bench. And that might be the difference, because I guess when you get to some of the counting stats, 61 runs, 68 RBIs, if he played every game in Coors, that's where you're kind of dreaming on like a Charlie Blackmon mold. But talk about McCarthy, Steve. This one definitely feels like it came out of nowhere in a way.
This is just a really crazy profile, just a crazy player. Like, you know, the guy had a 592 OPS last year and 222 plate appearances. You would have thought that maybe he would have been out of baseball potentially.
Yeah.
To going to putting up, you know, what is a career year. And that was the year before that. You know, he was pretty good. He had 8 homers, 25 steals, 750 OPS, like, fine. There was a time where they just did not play him versus lefties. That's why he's sat, you know, 23 games or hasn't started 23 games this year. But he's not only started versus lefties recently, he's let off recently, which is nice. And, you know, the Rockies are being rewarded for it. And then just going to the underlying profile, like, you know, has a great launch angle, sweet spot, great XBA, doesn't strike out, but he chases and whiffs a good amount, doesn't walk, but has elite speed. So, like, you know, doesn't hit the ball that hard, but actually, you know, barrels it for, you know, the slap hitter he is a little bit more than you would expect, which has led to, you know, the 13 homers or so.
All pull.
So doing that, added you know, a decent amount of bat speed. It's the highest bat speed that he's had, since it's been tracked. So, we were talking like bottom 5, bottom 15 percentile, and now it's, top 30, it's 33rd percentile. So bottom third of the league rather than bottom, 10th, which is a big deal for someone playing in Coors and that's been focusing on pulling their fly balls. So, there was a point where I was out on Jake McCarthy because he was like just this speed guy that couldn't hit. Then I was kind of back in because he showed a little bit more. And now all of a sudden it's a seemingly really usable player that's playing versus lefties in a great environment and can provide some pop to go along with that speed.
Yeah, I know this isn't typically your mold of like an outfielder, Steve. I feel like I can say that after 6 years of the show, but yeah. if he's landing in like a reasonable zone for probably what, like an OF2, I know you're not going to find your power here, but
yeah,
do you believe enough in like the 274 XBA, not even the 294 he's put up? The home road splits like Goodman aren't brutal. And he seems like a, kind of a 20 steal floor guy. Could you see yourself having any McCarthy next year if he's kind of going in like a, the problem is, isn't he going in the honeypot pitcher zone? Like 90
I would have loved, him as an OF3, OF4, mm-hmm. but I think maybe he'll go, I don't know. Maybe it's, it's Jake McCarthy. Maybe people won't buy it as much. But I just think that the fact that he has, 35 combined homer and steals, plays in cores with a good average, like he's going to be hyped up and probably a bit too expensive for my liking, but maybe that's a mistake. Maybe that is a mistake.
Yeah. We shall see. One thing to note is despite being 29 years old and kind of having this late bloomer, high watermark career year, sprint speed is still 99th percentile, yeah. So there's no doubt in that. And that's a tasty combo in Coors with all the pole air stuff. So, all right, that gets us through half of our hitters, and we've got three more. We got pitchers on deck as well, but we're going to take our first ad break. We'll be right back after this. All right, so Steve, going from Jake McCarthy to another Jake. Not from State Farm, had to do it. Jake Bowers is player rater number 22 in terms of hitters. Should have mentioned, by the way, that Sal Stewart number 18 on the player rater in terms of hitter list, and McCarthy is 21. So right after him is Jake Bowers. This is one I have to say, Steve, was when he went 4-for-4 on Sunday against my team, his fourth hit was an RBI double. Ooh. That tied a category that made me miss the bye week in my 16 playoff by a half a category. So I'll do my best to be kind to Jake Bowers here, honestly, it's not hard. The dude has just been on fire, and this is a name that has been a WAF name. You have to go back to maybe like 2021, 2022. I believe there were a couple years where the underlying metrics when he was like on Cleveland where we were interested, and it just felt like he never really put it together. Yeah, I mean, he had 3 years where he hit 12 homers and it's like, okay, maybe this guy's just a platoon bat. No, the Brewers, it's not just pitching. They can turn anybody into a bona fide fantasy stud. And Bowers is the latest here. He's got a 277 average, an 894 OPS, 22 homers, 9 steals, just rock solid all around at first. Not like your traditional slugging 35 homer first baseman, but I think he does enough of the other stuff that it's like, I don't know, kind of Andrew Vaughn shaped or just, and they've been such a good offense as well that some of those sneaky counting stats, like he's sitting at 74 runs, 72 RBIs. We're going to finish the season and Jake Bauer is going to have a really good stat line. And then you look next at what's under the hood, and it all looks sensational with the 14% barrel rate, walks a ton. The XBA supports that he's at least like a plus batting average, maybe not the 277. But he's another guy that it's just like kind of all fields with you know, they're not just wall scrapers. So another 30-year-old like Jake McCarthy, pretty much, late bloomer. What do we make of this? Where do we think we'll go? Do we buy it? Are you going to be in? Talk about Jake Bowers here, Steve.
Man, what an insane year this is from both the production and the back of the baseball card stats and the underlying stats. And like this kind of, like you said, this kind of should have been an obvious pick for a breakout. Like last year, all of these numbers were just as good. Like the bat speed was great. The barrel rate was great. The hard hit rate was, you know, well above average. The expected slugging and ex-wobo were really good. Like, you know, he didn't play versus lefties, so I get it.
662 really, ADP, Steve.
Yeah.
662.
Yeah. He was free. He was absolutely free. This is insane. And it's like you said, even years before that, there were things that he was doing process-wise well that I think, you know, when we talked like deep, deep sleepers, he always came up on you know, shows where we looked at, you know, things that guys were doing really well. Like you would do the filter and be like the top five hitters in baseball and Jake Bowers as far as like chase rate and, you know, Bauer rate above 10% sort of thing. And we would kind of brush it to the side just because, oh yeah, platoon player or whatever. That's what makes this so hard, right? Because you fall into the traps of, yeah, we love these things these guys do, but oh, they don't play versus lefties and how valuable are they in fantasy? But then guys like Bowers does well enough and earns playing time versus lefties. Guys like Dominic Canzone earn playing time versus lefties. It's really impressive what Jake Bowers has done, and it's hard for me to say that it's not real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's going to be a tricky one just because it's still one season. Quick, Steve, I want to check because he was kind of a factor with like the crowded roster for the mm-hmm. Brewers when they were calling up Luis Lara. His name was in discussion. So his contract situation, so he's on a 1 year. So yeah. That will be one to watch really closely. Yeah, he's going to get paid. And where's the landing spot for a lefty that can play first, left field, right field? So, yeah, I mean, hopefully whatever he found with the Brewers sticks. But, yeah.
I think he will be the Mets starting first baseman next year.
Okay. Yeah, I think it feels like they're going to move on from Bowers because sell high and they've got such a good farm. Talking about the Brewers. So a lot of his value might be tied to where he ends up. And if we're actually playing baseball, not to say that out loud, but, that's Bowers. Very, very interesting and heck of a year. Moving to a far more established name and another one that was in actually fun fact, Steve, my, pitcherless podcast audition, was talking about Randy Arozarena.
My article audition was talking about Randy Arozarena.
No way. So yeah, this is when he was like the loudest player during that COVID year with the Rays. But yeah, now this was the tease early on of a guy that's kind of reinventing himself, because when you think of Arozarena, you think of the recent years where the batting average is kind of waned from 250 down to 220, 230, but you're just clinging on to the power speed combo. And then last year we saw 27 homers, we saw 31 steals, but a 238 average. And that was kind of like at age 30, a little bit of a boring name, but one that was going at pick 87. And this year, it seems like there's a little bit of a reinvention of Arozarena with the hit tool really taking a step forward. He's sitting at a 274 batting average, which you have to go all the way back to 2021 since the last time he hit that well. The speed is still solid. He's sitting at 20 steals right now, so maybe by the end of the year he'll be flirting with 30. The power at 17 homers has kind of come down a little bit, and maybe that's okay because the expected batting average kind of supports what he's done, and the strikeout rate has improved from a couple years in a row where it was like 26, 27%, and now it's down to 21%. On top of that, something we don't usually like for guys, he's trading out fly balls for grounders, but also for line drives. I bring up a Rosarena not to, I know I'm painting like a rosy picture, no pun intended. I don't know that I'm in on a Rosarena, Steve, but this was one that as I was going through it, I was like, this is an interesting like player development for him at age 31. We've seen a handful of guys kind of reinvent themselves in their 30s. A lot of times it's pitchers too, but he's kind of doing that in an impressive way. And I think it might be silly to dismiss him as like being past it just because he's not, 100th percentile sprint speed anymore.
Yeah, this one is definitely like in my personal blind spot. Like I've essentially been waiting for the other shoe to drop on Randy Rosarena since that playoff run where he homered, every night during the COVID season and, backed it up with a great rookie year. Hard to believe that was, 5 years ago now. Crazy. I felt sort of vindicated in 2024 when, he had a 2020 season, but, the average started to come down just because it was like, yeah, the underlying metrics have been pointing at this, that the K rate should go up and that he doesn't have the best plate discipline and the batted ball metrics have never been elite. But he's done a good job still producing value despite that basically every year, right? Like even that year that I just mentioned when he hit 219, 2020. Last year, yeah, he only hit 235. He had 27 homers and 31 steals. Like that's a really good fantasy player, like with a 760 OPS. This year, this will be his highest OPS in a full season ever. So yeah, the power's down a little bit, but there's, good OBP. The slug is, back to it's the second highest that it's been since that 2021 season, despite just the 17 homers. So, it's not just the OPS isn't just being propped up by like singles and walks, right? There actually is some slug to go with it too, despite just the 17 homers. The 140 WRC plus is the highest it'll be. He's never cracked 127 before that. So, yeah, props to Rosarena. Like, this has been a really good fantasy season, despite, the Mariners being disappointing, it being a tough ballpark, him having some concerns of the hood, like cutting the K rate, still having an average barrel rate and a decent hard hit. Like, I think it's been a good trade-off. It clearly is working for him. And if this is the new version of a Rosarena, like this is a fine, fine end product.
Yeah, another one that will be a free agent at the end of the year as well. And I think Seattle, for how much we look up to their pitching, whether or not they all turn out, is not the best offensive environment. So, I'm not sure in like a keeper league I'm in for multiple years because, he's only done it this 1 year. But with the right landing spot, I think this feels like kind of a rock solid OF2 if you're buying some of the changes and still that 2020 floor. So, that's a Rosarena. Moving right along, our last one is certainly a name we've talked about throughout the WAF history, but not at all this year, and it's Brandon Lau. The thing with Lau, Steve, is a 253 batting average, 798 OPS. He does have 27 home runs. Want to give him respect here as second base for the Pirates, age 32 season. I don't know how much different this looks than what we've known Brandon Lau to be for years and years. I'm wondering if it's just we're finally seeing Brandon Lau healthy and on a team that kind of puts him right in the heart of the order. 80 RBI is very impressive, but you can prove me wrong. I'm not sure this is moving the needle for me on how I would kind of value Brandon Lau every year.
This is who he is. This is exactly who he is. I mean, last year he had 31 homers in 553 plate appearances. The year before that, that's exactly what he was pacing for. He had 21 homers in 425, right? When Brandon Lau plays 130 to 150 games, he hits 30 homers. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the year he hit, the 1 year he played 149 games, he hit 39. Like, he's not going to get there this year. But, like, baseball reference is a, like what is his per 162? Let me look that up. Apologies. I'm never usually on Baseball Reference, despite it being a great site.
Yeah, I can filibuster in the meantime, because I think the really unique thing is at second base, like, what do we make of Lau? Because the fact that in the player rater, he is, let me see, in terms of hitters, we're both on the lookup here. Yeah, he's number 34 hitter.
Yeah.
On the board, and there are only a few, probably five second basemen ahead of him. So, yeah, I don't know that I'll be that into it, but if what you see is what you get, and he's going to give you 32 bombs at second at pick like 130, that's
his per 162 is 34 homers, 98 RBIs, 92 runs. Like, that is what he does. Then his career slash is 248, 342, 480 for an 804 OPS.
It's such boring value, dude. There's just no way I'm going to ever end up with shares, because I know it's I'm
great. It's
for, it
dude, it's it great.
I got to respect it. I just know this is, it's like the Sonny Gray of hitters or something, where he'll be going at pick 125, 130. You might have to, like, take your medicine if you're desperate for a second baseman or something. But for the most part, that's where you're wanting.
We talk about how second base stinks every year. Second base strategy should be draft Brandon Lau. That's what your second base strategy should be. And that's been mine. Like, in the league where I have Sal Stewart, I have Brandon Lau. There is playing time risk as far as injury, right? The fact that he's played, you know, 149 games once. Other than that, the career high was 134 last year. He should get to that this year.
Yeah, back
so
to
it's
back
been
years.
It's been pretty good, in back to back seasons. So, you know, there is that playing time risk, but on per plate appearance production, like, you're not getting much better than Brandon Lau at second base.
Yeah. Really rough against the lefties, but that's always
that's
been the
fair.
Case.
Yeah,
he's
also
been so good. That, against
that's the also going to limit the playing time too, right? He is going to, especially as he ages, and they want to keep him healthy. Like, he's never going to play. He probably won't ever play 149 games again, right?
Right. Yeah.
It just won't happen.
Yeah, 593 OPS versus lefties, 893 versus righties. So it's the Brandon Lau experience. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right, Steve, that it's like, do we expect if he stays healthy, he's going to slow down at age 33? No. Like, some of these homers, most of the homers are just no doubters. So,
and like, you know, even if you have a daily league, just you're one hitter who's on the, you know, if you carry one bench hitter or something like that, just make sure that they have second eligibility, right? Like, just,
yeah.
That's the sort of game you got to play.
This whole segment
to be prepared.
This whole segment could have been free agents under the radar, because Brandon Lau as well is a free agent in 2027.
Yeah.
So Bowers, Arozarena, and Brandon Lau.
Interesting.
All likely to be on the move. So, hey, given the right ballpark for the lefty there, could be interesting for all three of those guys. So that rounds out our hitters. We're going to take another short ad break. We'll be right back and get into some pitchers right after this. All right. So, Steve, scrolling all the way back to the top of the player rater, usually the top of the ADP list as well. Talking about pitchers we haven't talked about that much, and we'll start with Christopher Sanchez, who we talked about a ton last year, and we had him as a sleeper last year, and then he vaulted up from whatever it was, ADP 160, to more of like a top 25, top 20 guy, and still just 29 years old. He has completely backed up the surface stats of last year, where he had a 250 ERA. This year it's a 251 ERA. He's got 187 strikeouts and 161 and two thirds innings. 16-4 record is pristine. The whip on the other hand, is a 122 versus the 106. The walk rate is still good. It's just been, he's just been slightly hittable. But all in all, when you look at trying to just dodge the grenades of SPs in the first three or four rounds, Sanchez has definitely been a success story, which is why he's number five on the player rater for pitchers. Just haven't talked about him a ton. Think it's worth bringing him up to see, you know, where are we at with him? Is he feel like a SP? I mean, of course, an SP one, but overall, does he feel like a top three, four starting pitcher next year?
I think so. I know Nick's kind of been a little bit down on him. He's got him at 19 on the latest on the latest rankings, and I will do him the service of reading the notes as
we go
as instructed. You know, and it's, you know, basically what you said. It's he's a threat to your whip. It's a 50% strike changeup and the 94 mile an hour fastball. So that's down from, you know, when Sanchez was, I think he may have been ranked as Nick's one at one point this year, if not for sure in the top three, with how good he's been over the last year. And then just to focus on like how good he's been, the fact that we haven't talked about him, like, what an ascension from like, oh yeah, this guy is a pretty good back end of the starter. Like, you know, we really like him. He does a lot of things well. Like, maybe we could see him being as like a fantasy three, maybe a fantasy two in a good year, to like, you know, whoa, like this guy's one of the best pitchers in the game. So props to him for that. Just been a great, great story and development. You know, he wasn't like a super hyped prospect. I think the Rays traded him for Curtis Meade, if I remember correctly. Ooh, so yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah. So I know that people love to say, you know, just blindly trust the Rays, but they're on the bad side of that too. You know, Joe Ryan, Christopher Sanchez have been some guys that they probably wish that they still had. But that being said, yeah. Just another all around great season from Christopher Sanchez. And yeah, he was drafted as like a top five starting pitcher last year, right? There's no reason why he won't be again.
Yeah. I mean, who am I to go in and debate Nick on the pitcher, but here we are. What I will point to is it's pretty encouraging for a guy that's been like sink or change primarily. And like early on when you were talking, Steve, when he was just kind of a stabilizer, a lot of people just pointed to like the ground ball rate. He did have some good whip years during that era. The swing and miss of the slider this year has really taken a step forward with like the whiff rate, to where now that looks more like a weapon pitch versus just kind of like the show me and not getting whiffs with it. So you never know. I mean, it could be kind of a one step backwards to take like three forward next year. Still 29 years old. Like, I mean, that's right in the ascent for a lot of pitchers these days. So he's also one that doesn't have loads of mileage in terms of like volume, other than the past couple seasons before this. It was, you know, didn't have triple digits in terms of innings pitched since 2023 and before that. So I think Sanchez is still one that will be early on, but I guess if Nick is early making a fade case, maybe there might be some value, or at least a little bit lesser of a price.
Who would you rather have for next year? Christopher Sanchez or Yoshinobu Yamamoto?
I knew you were going to ask that. I don't have my own mind made up on that, but I mean, when you point to the whip, like Yamamoto with a 0.89 whip but the K, it's just a trade-off in terms of the Ks.
Okay, here's maybe a better one. Christopher Sanchez or Jesus Luzardo?
I'm leaning Sanchez for that one. Okay. I think Yamamoto might have the argument. Like,
I went down five ranks on Yamamoto is Nick's five. Lizardo is his 10.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would take if you didn't tell me that and I wasn't reading that, I would be taking Christopher Sanchez over Lizardo for sure.
And I mean, to be fair, this isn't Nick's rankings for next year. This is a snapshot of like right this second, week to week now and ranking.
Yes.
So, you know, Sanchez's velocity is down a little bit. His change of feel is off. This could very easily change with two good starts from Sanchez. So,
yeah, I'll bounce on back.
Just
at
an
you,
interesting,
Steve.
Interesting game.
What about soon to be 38 Chris Sale with his dominant but less volume Chris Sale or Christopher Sanchez? The battle of the Chris's.
I would go Sale. Okay. I still believe in him, and you know, despite the age, like he looks like he's having like the Justin Verlander end of career, like, yeah, you know, this guy's still got it. You know, late 30s type of thing, like Hall of Famer bound last few seasons, you know.
I mean, when was the last time he had an ERA over 3? Has it happened? 216 this year. Oh yeah,
he had a 430 in 2023 with Boston here.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Sierra was 350. So
yeah, I got the whole offseason to look at it, but my gut right on the asking the question is I would press the button on Sanchez over.
Okay.
Sale. But,
yeah.
You know,
it's fair. Yeah.
It's a long offseason. All right. We'll move down the ADP board, but not too far on the player radar, because the number 7 pitcher is Chase Burns, who this one is certainly, I mean, goes without saying on Sanchez, but certainly not one that was overlooked at all in the industry coming into the year. He was a very buzzworthy name. I think the only thing I would say about WAF, Steve, is we talked about so many guys in that vicinity that a lot of times we were talking about Mizorowski or Schlittler or Nolan McClain, that I feel like Burns was always just kind of the afterthought. And maybe for me, at least, the home ballpark was part of that. But for a guy who's just 23 years old, he's kind of being overshadowed how good he's been by Mizorowski and Schlittler, because we talk about that honeypot from like pick 90 to 120, and that's exactly where Burns was. And he has just been excellent. The 14-2 record, 251 ERA, 111 whip is helping, and 159 strikeouts in 136 innings. I will say, compared to a name we'll talk about a little bit later, there's still a little bit of an elevated walk rate, but the fastball velocity, like sitting at 98, is excellent. And when you look at some of the swing and miss stuff, like the slider just looks otherworldly. 144 batting average against, 51% whiff rate. To me, whenever I see a whiff rate starting with a 5, that it feels DeGromian to me. And this kid's just 23 years old. So hats off to Chase Burns. And it seems like there's only maturity and maybe he's fastball slider heavy. Can he bring along some of those other secondaries to where he just kind of matures as a pitcher? And then it feels like sky's the limit. So look out. Have no idea where Chase Burns is going in drafts next year, but I got a feeling that this narrative will be following him throughout the offseason, that like do not sleep on how excellent he's been.
Yeah, it'll be round 2-3. I think he'll be up there in terms of pitchers for next season. It's incredible what he's doing, especially considering it's really just two pitches. He does throw a changeup. He's thrown 110 of them to lefties, so he does have a changeup that he throws to lefties. Like if you see he throws it 8% of the time to lefties. So still mainly fastball slider, but that goes to show you he is like, you know, one of those fastballs that I love. It's like, here's my fastball. It's down the middle. You can't hit it. And then here's the slider. If you guess fastball, you're toast on that too. So good luck. We have seen the downside of guys that don't develop that third pitch, like Spencer Strider. I know there was injury in there. And I'm not saying that's going to happen with Burns, but that's the downside there. But I don't see why we couldn't project him to develop, you know, a more reasonable changeup that he goes through in the off season more frequently to both hands, or just another different pitch, mm-hmm. whatever.
Like a young Freddie Peralta was kind of a two-pitch wonder. And,
yeah.
You know, threw gas and had some a good curve or sweeper, but yeah.
Like, this is what the Reds thought, like, Hunter Green would be when he came, when he first came up, right? Like, this is that good. So,
and they've done a nice job at this point with both of these guys. Yeah. So, yeah, I think, not sure how much else to add, but do you see yourself, Steve, maybe if he's like early mid round three,
going late, like in NFBC drafts, I would absolutely feel comfortable drafting him as my first starting pitcher and can see myself doing that. Drafts this offseason.
Underrated. It looks like he's probably going to end up eclipsing like 150 innings as well, which is always great for some of these young arms where you're just like, what's his
raw strikeout total? I never know how many strikeout guys have.
155.
Yeah. 155. Cool.
I mean, he might end up at like 150, 185 strikeouts or something like that. And pristine ratios. So
he could maybe touch 200 if he gets like 155, 160 and has like another 10 strikeout game here or there.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, he certainly could. Okay, next one, bouncing all over here in terms of ADP, because back near the top was Logan Gilbert, who coming into this year was like a top five pitcher off the board. And I think it's just a good one to like keep tabs on, Steve, because it felt like last year we saw, I mean, the last couple of years, because in 2024, we had 208 innings from Logan Gilbert and 220 strikeouts. And it was like, oh, the volume workhorse. Then last year, we just got 131 innings with some injuries in there. Mm-hmm. He had like an elbow scare. K-rate,
right, yeah.
Yeah, but 173 strikeouts and 131 innings. Now he looks right back to that like 2024 mm-hmm. version, just over a strikeout per inning, 335 ERA, 101 whip. He's still 29 years old. I think we trust the Mariners. We trust Logan Gilbert. He's got a deep arsenal. Like, there's a lot of good here, but I guess my question would be, and we just haven't talked about him because, you know, it's a little bit of like, what are you going to do? You're holding on to Gilbert and he's been productive, but it's not quite what you were hoping for. So my question is, do you think that Gilbert gets moved down substantially? If you still got Nick's list up, I'd be curious on where Gilbert's sitting there, but I'm wondering now, is he no longer kind of like a top 30, 40 pick off the board? Do we think that Gilbert might be like a fifth, sixth round pitcher next year? Or are we willing to say like, you know, he's still out and out SP1. He needs to be drafted accordingly.
I mean, Nick still got him at 8 right now. So according to Nick, yes. Basically saying, you know, he's still pounding heaters over the plate and then has, you know, just a strong floor, which I understand. And I think he will be propped up because of that floor. You know, despite the injury scare in 2025, that's going to be wiped away essentially, as he, you know, approaches 25 starts and has 145 innings and should get close to that 200 inning total, which is rarefied air. These days, I just think he has, you know, a strong floor, despite the fact that, like, yeah, all those guys that we talked about in the hype from these young guys is Burns, Schlittler, Mizorowski probably will pass him or at least be right around him. But I think there's still enough guys that kind of maybe have some more question marks that he's still going to be drafted, you know, around there. Like, yeah, I know Drew Rasmussen has been amazing despite tonight, like, but I'm not drafting Drew Rasmussen over Logan Gilbert next year.
Yeah.
Even like Dylan Cease, right? Like, that's probably a bit more volatility than I would want.
Right. I think he's Gilbert, he's a good oatmeal-y SP1 and you just kind of hope that there's a discount there. So,
yeah.
All right. Yeah. That's Gilbert. Next one, Gavin Williams is a name that, we move on too early sometimes, Steven.
Yeah.
I feel like I was there 2 years ago, three years ago, and last year it was promising from Gavin Williams, where we saw 167 innings, 173 strikeouts. This year, he's just blown the lid off, 190 strikeouts and 149 innings. The ERA has come up to like 374. He does have the 108 whip, which is a big, big improvement. And when you look at the walk rate this year at just 7.5%, that's a big improvement on what was 12% last year. So Gavin Williams at just 27 years, I mean, it feels like he's doing it. I don't know that he's in the same class as any of the names we've talked about with Sanchez, Burns, and Gilbert, but are we ready to kind of agree as a show that Gavin Williams is a solid SP2 where you would probably have to draft him to get these high strikeouts and some of the a little bit of the question marks, and obviously the team context isn't as good for like win totals and everything, but we just haven't talked about Gavin Williams, and we spent years talking about him prior to this. So what are your thoughts on another fastball heavy or at least a high heat fastball guy that we've liked in the past?
Yeah, I just remember watching Gavin Williams and like a point where he had hype and then was like sort of a disappointment in the first half of last year, and just telling myself like, you know, believe in this guy's stuff. Like the strikeout rate is still there. Yeah, he's given up a bunch of homers and runs, but this is really good. And then I just really did not have many shares of him this year, despite liking him while witnessing his growing pains. And I'm sort of kicking myself for that. Like I view him as, you know, the fact that he has this slightly elevated 3.74 ERA, and if he's going to be drafted as an SP2, like that feels like there's a market inefficiency that I'm like, okay, if you guys are waiting on Gavin, you know, taking all these pitchers and, you know, Logan Gilbert that had an injury scare and has a ton of miles on him and is a bit older, I'll wait and take Gavin Williams as my SP1 just because the strikeout rate's better, the walk rate's improved, the stuff is great, you know. It is an elevated home run to fly ball rate, and I think that may be just part of his game. But, you know, I'm good with everything else that Gavin Williams does, and just because he gives up a few more home runs than other people, I'll take that discount and hope for a lucky-ish year with the homer and take all those strikeouts and, you know, hopefully have like one of those peak Dylan Cease type years with Williams.
Yeah. Compared to any of the names we've talked about, and Burns, smaller sample size, but Gavin Williams, definitely the biggest changes this year in terms of like pitch mix, where it's been a multi-year trend, but the sweeper is his most used pitch at 29%. That's up from 19% last year. And the use of that four seamer that sits 97, 98 dropped from 37% down to 25%. So unconventional, but he's got five pitches that he throws often enough that for a 27-year-old, like, I guess I get a little bit nervous when somebody's leaning on a secondary as like the primary pitch, but I feel better about it when one, the fastball itself is, I guess you could say elite, really, in terms of the velocity, but also in terms of the results against. Like, it's not giving up a lot of damage at all. And then you just look that he's got a pretty deep pitch mix. Like, at age 27, I think you could talk yourself into this. I think maybe I've just been burned and there's a little bit of bias, or the Guardians aren't that exciting of a team that I'm kind of reluctant to buy in, maybe like wrongfully and a weird Mackenzie Gore type of way, but it's not that he's not the same pitcher. So, yeah, I think you could convince me that Gavin Williams is a decent draft this, not that, if you want to wait a little bit.
He is third in the league in strikeout rate and fifth in the league in strikeout minus walk rate.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. And just 27 years old. So there's Gavin Williams. Moving on to Peyton Tolley, who is buzzy of a name as he's been, and as hilarious of a character as he is in big market with the Red Sox, 6'6". Like, how have we not talked about him?
You could tell we don't have any Peyton Tolley shares, right?
Yeah, exactly. and we should be talking about him more, Steve, because we've seen, I would even say, not to make it a one-to-one comparison, but when I look at Chase Burns at 23 and Peyton Tolley at 23, Burns feels like, oh yeah, he's 23. He's on the trajectory of maturing as a pitcher and everything. I feel like with Tolley, it's like you're already looking at a good walk rate. You're already looking at a guy who's got 3.5-4 pitches. The whip is in check. The ERA is solid. He doesn't have as flashy of like the strikeout totals, but he's definitely a guy that like when you game log it, he's had a 14 strikeout outing, an 11 strikeout outing. Like he definitely can pop off and look like an SP1. Absurd extension, 6'6". Like, am I wrong in thinking where the industry doesn't talk enough about him? Is it just us? I feel like maybe in a different year, he would be just kind of dominating the fantasy circles. Maybe I'm just missing the algorithm, but I'm interested and I love everything I see here. So I think I will be investing, albeit the 120 innings is a little different. I would love to look at what his total is for the year on innings, because sometimes we fall into that trap of like, oh, did he have some time?
115 at the major league level, and he's had
15 in the minors.
15 at the minors.
So he's at 130 right now, which is a great kind of building block if he gets up to like 145, 150. So anyway, talk to me about Tolley, Steve. I'm excited if you can't tell.
Yeah. What is there not to like? Like, this is the quintessential, I hope this guy's going and pick like 80 to 100. I'll take him there all day long next year. Like some of the stuff is just as good as the guys that we just talked about, right? It's a 28% strikeout rate. It's a really good walk rate at just 6.7%. You know, the pitch mix is good versus, you know, he has, you know, three offerings that he goes to, you know, close to 20% of the time. The cutter's at 19%, sinker's at 22%, fastball's at 47%. So, you know, really, really hard to find anything that you don't like. So, yeah, all aboard the Peyton Tolley train. We have definitely missed him as far as like breakout names and guys that have lived up to the hype. What a good pitcher, and I don't see why it's not going to continue next year.
I think I'm ready to say I would draft him over Drew Rasmussen next year.
I feel Rasmussen, I think, could have made this list, and I feel like Rasmussen gets more, his innings total is still low. Innings total from the past have still haunted him, despite him having 150 innings last year, him being at 129 this year and on pace to, you know, set career highs in that. Like, I know 23 and 24 were basically shot years, but he's been so good. And was also,
I got him in my home league, dude. I respect Rasmussen. I think it's a ceiling. It's a ceiling.
Yeah,
chase.
That's fair. That's fair.
Like, I don't know that Rasmussen could pop off and be an SP1. I don't think that's.
He is essentially this year. You know, right? I mean, he is.
Are there stats that different this year?
I mean, dude,
15 extra innings. I guess the whip has been better. The ERA is pretty similar. Strikeout rate is similar.
Do you know what? I know there's been some low innings total, but do you know what the highest ERA Rasmussen has had in a season outside of his?
That's a good point. Track
outside of his 15 factor. Games as a reliever.
So you're talking high floor. What is it? 343.
Yeah, cut off about a quarter of a run there. 284 is the highest ERA he's had in the season.
Oh, my God.
284.
Gosh, that's insane. So he's having
a down does here. Not give up runs. He just does not give up runs.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's
you know what his highest whip is in a season?
Well, now I'm cheating because I'm looking at it, Steve. But if you take out those little Brewers stints, with the 15
innings as a reliever,
What is it? 108 is the 108. High.
108.
Fair, but if you were to say who's a better bet to get 175 strikeouts,
yes,
next
sure,
year,
sure. Yeah, yeah.
It's just a floor ceiling play, but I wouldn't be shocked if, mm-hmm. at least on my board, if they're going off around the same zone. Which I mean,
yeah,
I'm with
it's
you
a career high for Rasmussen as far as total strikeouts in 133. So
okay. Okay, well, we got to round out on a down note here with Brian Wu. Talk about another home leaguer for me, Steve. He has turned it around a little bit, but for a name that I feel like we were both coming into the season talking about as SP1 value.
Yeah,
I think
we were all in.
Yeah, we took him in the early pitcherless mock draft. Mm-hmm. It's just been a bummer. Like, if you told me that the health would have been there like it has, mm-hmm. I would not have said, yeah, you're going to get a 410 ERA. The home road splits are a lot crazy of the story, or at least the symptoms, but a 196 ERA in Seattle, 596 ERA on the road is nuts. I guess it's the most drastic version of like the Logan Gilbert question, mm-hmm. that what happens here from Wu, because in his three starts in August, he's had a one ERA with a 0.67 whip. He still doesn't look like a world beater in terms of like strikeout rate, mm-hmm. but he is beating the volume questions when he had all the forearm and elbow stuff in 23 and 24, and he's 26 years old. So like, to me, he feels like there's going to be some split camps and big variance on min pick, max pick come March next year. But where does the dust settle with Wu in the industry, and where do you fall on it, Steve?
I don't know. There's outside of that, like the strikeout rate's gone down. It's 24% from the 27% last year, right? The other end of that, like the left on base percentage is extremely low. Like that's going to regress. Also on the flip side of that, like the swing strike rate has gone down a full percentage point from last year. But the velocity has gone up. Like there's so many contradicting signs. The homer run fly ball rate is down. That's great. Giving up less homers, the ground ball rate is worse. Giving up more fly balls. So, it's confusing. I buy that he is a guy that is not going to give up many hits. He's going to have low three to mid threes ERA, and get you enough strikeouts to be, a 1A starting pitcher, a really good SP2. If you have two of those guys, you can get by with him as like the first pitcher that you take. I think there was a lot of hype around him after he had 186 innings last year and sort of beat those health concerns from 2024 or 2020. Yeah, from 2024. So maybe it's been slightly disappointing in that sense, but there's still enough to like here that I think Brian Wu is a buy long term.
Hmm. Where do you think he fits with the Peyton Tolley, Drew Rasmussen discussion? Is he going after those guys or around them?
Yeah, I think he'll go after Tolley. He probably will go before Rasmussen. I think just, not that you were wrong, but I just think there's volume concern with Rasmussen that I still don't think are fair, despite what I, rambled
debated
on there,
yeah,
for the last 5 minutes, and maybe not the upside as one of these guys.
Yeah,
Rasmussen.
I mean, in a vacuum, I know it's been disappointing for Wu, but I can already tell you, like, if the price is right in that area, like if it is kind of pick 75 to 90, normally in that zone, I'm like, well, at that point, just reach for, and Peyton Tolley might fit the bill for that next year's, Mizorowski, Chase Burns type of thing, or maybe he'll be priced out to where it's more in the 60 range, but I like that zone for an SP2, whether it's Wu or Rasmussen or Tolley. I mean,
yeah,
it's tough to say when you start saying SP2 because it is kind of like you are looking for floor at that stage, which makes me kind of double back on my Tolley Rasmussen discussion. But Wu, in a weird way, because we're seeing the floor extra low this year, feels like this has, in 5 years, you're going to look back at Wu's career and health pending, probably say, yeah, that was an off year because the fastball is still excellent. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the home road split seems so bizarre. Yeah. So, okay, nice. Well, yeah, some of these, it's just you look back at the list. The hitters are a little bit more understandable with the exception of like Sal Stewart, I guess. When you look at like Lau and Rosarena, but when you look at the pitchers, like, man, we haven't talked about Chase Burns
because
that
we don't really talk about the guys that are just like crushing it for the most part, you know? For sure. Yeah, like what is there to say? You know?
Yep, that's a good point. All right, well, that rounds us out. As promised, we ran a little long, but great show. Great to touch on some names that we haven't throughout the season, and it will be really interesting to keep tabs on them throughout the offseason, especially some of those free agent ones. But we'll be back next week. Thank you guys for hanging in with us. If you guys are in the playoffs or home stretch, of course, best of luck. We are around on all the socials if you guys have any questions or topics you want us to weave in during the dog days here. But we are still once a week through September. So that wraps us up for episode 225. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys. Later.